Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Seiko Radio here on Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Jim Ventura. Whether you're catching the show live or in archive, again, welcome everybody. A little quick note about me, and then we'll dive into our show here today. It's going to be a little bit of a shorter show. I usually do 45 minutes. Probably only going to be a little over a half hour. I got a little time crunch, but we'll be able to cover the material. Just the same, I believe. Again, my name is Jim Ventura. I'm a professional astrologer and navigational consultant. I work with all different types of oracles. I do private sessions here in my home office as well as by phone all over the country. Well, possibly against the world. I have been doing that for many, many years. If you're interested in information about booking a session, you could check out my website at jimventura.com. And email is usually the best way to get hold of me about booking sessions. Okay. Also, I am an author. I have published two books, and I'm in the process of getting ready to publish a third, actually. And I do a column every other month called Snake Oil, which is what this show is largely based on, at least for this episode. And it comes out every other month. And if you're interested in that, you can email me at venturasaj@yahoo.com. Get added to the mailing list. It is free and it's blind copied, so there'll be no edit. Sales material, and often I do specials and discounts for people receiving my column if they want to book personal sessions as well as classes. Okay. Anyway, quick note on all of that. This is one of my live column reads, kind of a little bit of a longer column also than I normally do. So bear with me. It's a very strong one. I wrote this a few months back, and it was my March-April column. Just took me a little while to finally get on air to do a show for a lot of different reasons. It's interesting also because, like, I write about very current themes and issues, and I've worked through a lot of this about what this column was about. But I have a few added commentary I want to make here after I finish reading it that I think will give my listeners some real good insight here that I think that's important. So we'll dive right in and read the column aloud here, and then we'll, like I said, then we'll go into talking about it in more detail. Again, I don't think we'll have time to take any calls today. Just because of the length of it and the subject, and I kind of stopped doing mini readings on the show, on air. I just think there's plenty of those type of things all over the, these blog spots that you can get to, just not really something I'm really want to do anymore. Just book a personal session if you're interested in that. Okay, so this column is called Yes, Dear. Anyway. So let's start with my March-April snake oil. When I work with clients, one of the most frequent subjects I get asked about is relationships. Question, when will I find one? Where's my soulmate? What do I need to do to help my current relationship? Should I stay in my current relationship or should I find something better? Will I always be alone? This aspect of life often doesn't match our ideal and is frequently packed with at least some challenge. Most relationships fall somewhere between almost perfect and on the other end, seriously toxic. I once had a female client who was uncomfortable and embarrassed about being controlled by her possessive, dominating boyfriend. We discussed possible solutions, and she decided it might help if he came to see me. Aside from being in denial about whether he was controlling at all, and he really was, he tried to manipulate and control me during our session. It was a successful attempt. And he left likely thinking and telling her that I was not qualified or some such similar thing. There is unquestionably a need to prioritize healthy compromise in any relationship. It's important to recognize that when one does commit to a mate, to some extent, the partner's needs need to be a higher priority than even friends, family, or even possibly children. The bond needs to be a strong one for a relationship to thrive, but choosing a healthy mate in the first place is tremendously important. A bad choice can have extremely bad repercussions for ourselves and those around us. Many of us will at some point go through the lessons of choosing a toxic, dominating partner who will pull us away from family, friends, and what is best for our own personal happiness. While a good mate can be very beneficial, we still need other people in a healthy support circle. The fantasy of the two of us leaving everything behind and moving into a little cabin cut off from the world rarely, if ever, actually works out. My first encounter with a manipulative mate was when I was about 22. She was not actually my mate, though. I had a best friend for about 2 years named Matt. He was 2 years younger than me, and he had a cousin named Tammy, who he was very close to. We all hung out often, smoked a bit of weed at the time, ate pizza, went to a lot of concerts, typical of late teens, early 20s stuff in the late 80s. I saw some amazing groups like Pink Floyd, Rush, Yes, Six, with Tammy and Matt. It was a wonderful period of my life. Matt met a girl at his job named Marianne. He was head over heels in love and thrilled by his first real girlfriend. She was in good shape, pretty, but had a bit of a hard, it was a bit hard not to notice her controlling side. I worried I might be too judgmental about her, but something was off. Weeks into the relationship, she was pregnant, and she and Matt decided to get married. All of our friends actually had a good time at their rushed wedding a few months later, but we did place odd bets humorously on how long it would last. We did not share that sarcastic appraisal with Matt, as he was really happy, and we didn't want to ruin that. The party was rushed, a bit cheesy, with a lot of 80s music, and Matt did his share of a popular drug at that time. We saw a lot less of Matt during his wife's pregnancy, but he invited us over to see the new baby months later when she was about 3 months old. Marianne was visibly annoyed that we were at the apartment and seemingly annoyed that we existed in the first place. The baby was super cute, and Matt was a proud dad, but clearly Marianne hated me and Tammy for some reason. Weeks later, Tammy called me to share that Marianne had forbade Matt to see either of us anymore. She threatened to leave him with the baby if he stayed friends with us. That was bad enough to block him from seeing me, but also the cousin, who was like a sister, was something truly ugly. I'd never encountered this type of controlling type of individual before. Matt was submissive to her request. Tammy filled me in on bits and pieces she overheard over the next 2 years. Inevitably, Marianne gained a lot of weight, understandably, while she was pregnant, but was lax in taking it off and gained quite a bit more. Matt worked two jobs so she could be a stay-at-home mom. About 2 years later, Marianne got pregnant by another guy she was having an affair with and then filed for divorce from Matt. I saw Matt after his ordeal when he came to my job to apologize for losing me as a friend and how he treated Tammy and me. I was impressed by his willingness to own all of it, and I did forgive him. But things had changed, and we hardly saw each other after that. About a year later, I left New York and moved to Phoenix. There were many times over the years when I saw both manipulating, controlling men, but also women. It didn't matter whether they were male or female, gay or straight, but universal anger themes about who you're flirting with, quote, making the partner lose touch with friends and family, isolating them, playing on guilt, and even mild stalkings with things I sadly saw too often. When I was about 14, I was first exposed to a physically angry woman when I saw my friend Richie's mom punch her husband in the face through the kitchen window. Richie told me it was normal. I had a client for years who was a psychologist herself, was with an abusive man who got so angry at her, both real and imagined slights. He locked her in the basement for 4 days as punishment. When I was working as a waiter in my early 20s, I became close friends with one of the waiters who was truly sweet, handsome, young 19-year-old named Nick. He had dreams of going to school to be a pilot. He often talked about his dream with excitement. Weeks later, he got his girlfriend pregnant and decided to marry her and take another job so they could live in a small basement apartment to raise a child. A noble thing to do, and he clearly loved her. But his plans to go to school and to be a pilot went out the window. He took a second job cleaning houses with his fiancée. I could see the sadness in his eyes about abandoning his dream, but he was truly in love. She never really made him quit the restaurant, and I never saw Nick again. Over the years, I've seen quite a bit of controlling stuff in the arena of relationships. I had a client who was a regular for about a year. There was extra excitement on her part when I did a tarot reading for her that showed her meeting an air sign male. She met an Aquarius man a few months later, married soon after. She and her spouse got involved in relationship coaching. I even saw him once, and he was impressed with my skills, until later on he read a column I wrote about that mentioned God or all that is, and he was outraged. He was a devout atheist and told her that this kind of talk is nonsense, and forbade her to see me for sessions and to be removed from my mailing list. A mild or funny example is when a very attractive one-time client of mine met her quote-unquote soulmate. She seemed very happy. He was a good guy and quite devoted to her. Yet when I saw pictures of him on social media in a hideous pink and peach sweater uncomfortably posing in a field of flowers, I suspected that while she probably loved that picture, his eyes portrayed another sense. It looked as if every ounce of his masculinity was forced out of his body. Almost two decades later, I became friends with a late 20s, in-shape, vegan, attractive, old soul named Lars. We inevitably worked together in a restaurant when I was in my early 30s and pretty much became like brothers. I got along really well with Lars, and I saw him as my little brother from another mother. An old girlfriend of his named Phyllis, who was a few years older than Lars, moved back to the Valley after they were estranged for about 3 years. She was an energetic, lean, attractive woman with frizzy blonde hair and well-educated. Phyllis was about as far left politically as one could possibly be. She was like a bit of a hippie chick who fought with her more conservative parents often. She attended every left-wing march, women's rights, Bernie rallies, pro-LGBTQ rights, and even had a thing for rescuing animals. Unfortunately, her and Lars' relationship was toxic. She stalked him, they fought often, and he retaliated by dating a stripper to make her nuts, which it did. I did a reading for her by her request and suggested that if Lars was meant to be in her life, the crazy fighting needed to stop, and she should trust that they would find a way to come together. She was not happy with my advice. I saw a bit of Phyllis's anger surface a few times, and while she was a very loving, caring person, I often could see some questionable overreactions to even minor things. Lars came to my apartment in a state of extreme worry. He had gotten her pregnant during the peak of their wars, and she was adamant about having the baby. He confided in me that he was seriously thinking of running away, even changing his name and starting his life over. This is how uncomfortable he was with the extremes and her at times, sometimes even scary behavior. I suggested he could co-parent without them being together, but I thought the running away plan was not workable. He left my place still shaken up, then called literally the next day to invite me to their wedding. Phyllis was about 4 months pregnant for their backyard wedding and was somewhat cordial to me, but actually never spoke to me at the wedding and also after they moved in together. She was still angry about me telling her to stop stalking him. The wedding was cheesy and rushed, and I had flashbacks to years earlier when I was at a similar wedding. I was proud of myself for not suggesting they play the song White Wedding by Billy Idol at this wedding, a bit of Sagittarius restraint on my part. Instead, they played a lot of mostly 80s songs they both loved. While the wedding seemed bizarre, it was kind of fun. This time I did not verbalize to anyone about how long I thought their relationship would last, but the deja vu was tripping. The parents were left to clean up after the backyard wedding. Lars and Phyllis climbed into the car to drive away to their honeymoon theatrically to a song they both apparently bonded over years before when they first met, called Get Out of My Dreams, Get Into My Car by Billy Ocean. After some months of me not talking to Lars somewhat or just occasionally grabbing lunch, Phyllis wanted nothing to do with me. Finally, things changed when she had little Bess. Phyllis asked Lars to contact me to see the baby while she was in the hospital. Phyllis and I hugged and never discussed any of it. I made an internal vow to keep the peace and even to get to know Phyllis to keep my friendship with Lars strong. Bess grew up, and a few years later, they had another little girl named Georgette. Bess often challenged her mother and made Phyllis crazy. Bess was smart and humorously called her mom Phyllis instead of mother. She's very grounded. While she clearly loved her mom, she seemed to know Phyllis was a little bit nuts. When I was 15 years, I was part of this family. Most holidays, and usually twice a month, I would hang out at their home. I saw the kids in plays, sporting events, we bought each other gifts, and I was very much part of all of their lives. Both Bess and Georgette called me Uncle Jim. It was really nice being part of that family. I even got to be friends with Phyllis, too. Lars got really sick when the kids were still young, and his loyal wife, Phyllis, stuck by his side through a very rough ordeal. Thankfully, he healed. But Phyllis was left always terrified of Lars getting sick again and became quite a bit of a hypochondriac. Just had a moon in Virgo. I'll interject that real quick here, too. Sagittarius, sun sign, moon in Virgo. I knew that they both really loved their kids dearly and they were good parents, but I always thought they were a little bit too focused on giving the kids whatever they wanted. Both were very far left in their politics and parenting approach, but it was never my place to comment, so I didn't. Lars opened his own Pilates studio and did fairly well in his business, but he was a chronic pot smoker, even to the point of smoking weed while making his coffee each morning. It was a little extreme for me, but he handled it, and I thought it worked for him, maybe even masking some of his childhood traumas. Phyllis either joined in from time to time or angrily fought him over it. Yeah, while Lars was at times a bit cheesy, he clearly loved being a dad. One of the cheesiest things he would ritually do was watch E.T., the extraterrestrial, every year with the kids. He especially loved the song Turn on Your Heart Light by Neil Diamond. He would ask me to sing it when I did karaoke at times and often requested the song be played by Alexa when I was over at the house. A truly stupid song, but my buddy loved it, and I saw it as one of his weird but still likable quirks. I thought that even though they fought a lot, he was still fairly happy. But Lars did have this fascination with aliens and often talked about and read books about alien abduction. I half-joked that maybe he longed to be abducted and taken away. Phyllis has always come up with schemes for a new business or side hustle while she prioritized being there for her kids. Following through on these plans was often a problem. She was a great cook, especially desserts, and decided to market her treats first from home, then hopefully a small shop with her specialties, trifles, and designer donuts. For credit, she was really talented, and her desserts were delicious. I made suggestions for marketing, but she didn't want to hear most of them. I actually went to college for advertising art and marketing, so usually people appreciated my insight. After weeks of work, she was ready to begin sales and excitedly showed me her design logo. Phyllis kind of had a notable theatrical side in her younger years, doing plays, singing, and doing interpretive dance. She had a stage name she went by in college and high school, which was Sassy. She thought it was better to go with Sassy because it was a cooler name than Phyllis, quote, for her new business. She came up with Sassy's Trifles and Designer Donuts. The problem was the amount of work required to make those spectacular desserts, making a profit, refrigeration, delivery, were difficult. When I told her that people might also think of something not so pleasant when seeing her logo because shortened, it was STDD for Sassy's Trifles and Designer Donuts, that insert made her furious with me. For some reason blamed me for not telling her sooner, but she wouldn't let me in on her plan, so how could I warn her? A few weeks later, the COVID scare came along. Both Lars and Phyllis shut down their businesses like most of us were told to do to flatten the curve for 2 weeks. I saw Lars for what turned out to be the last time a few weeks into the COVID shit show. I intuitively felt that when he left my home, it would be the last time I saw him. He was very scared about passing along the virus to any of his clients or his family. I kind of wondered if after almost 20 years of friendship, if you ever heard anything I taught him about illness, that it was multi-layered, not random, and we're not powerless over it. But at the same time, I also understood his fear. My family and many of my friends went into fear mode. They wore the masks, stayed inside, avoided people, obsessively wiped things down, and followed all the crazy rules. Thankfully, one by one, most of my friends started waking up after a few months and began to see how some of these well-meaning suggestions and fear tactics from the media were mostly ludicrous. Not surprisingly, Phyllis delved into every cliche, ranting about staying home, how everyone needed to be vaxxed, posting on social media sites about how selfish the rest of us were to go outside, yelling at other people about their noses popping out of their mask, and the ultimate crime of not staying at home and getting food delivered like they responsibly were doing. So much for the makers of food and delivery people, though. I guess they were expendable. Even after almost 2 years of all the extremes, both from both the right and left perspectives, I observed she would still post passionately on Facebook about how this will never end because all the anti-vaxxers and non-mask wearers were killing everyone. I'm sure my trip to Vegas when it reopened probably made her think I was selfish. I'm guessing my posts about how I was not getting pulled into any of the sphere and continued to use natural, holistic methods for handling all of it made her head explode. And she inevitably unfriended me and blocked me as well on social media. She either made Lars do the same or he chose to for his own reasons. Looking back at all of it, I remembered something very significant. When I first met Phyllis, she had a very sweet, adorable cat. When we would pet her cat, Zagnut, he would purr, and then after a few minutes, he would just snap, for who knows what reasons, and viciously claw and painfully bite you. He was truly his mom's reflection. In spiritual terms, that would be like a familiar. Both Lars and Phyllis cut me out of their lives. I was also removed from all their family and the friends that I was connected to for so many years. My position as Uncle Jim was also terminated. The experience in my early 20s with Matt and his wife was uncomfortable, but this was about as five times worse. Other than the staggering cruelty I dealt with in my mid-20s when I found myself dealing with an abused criminal I briefly lived with who stole from me and nearly destroyed my life, this unfriending from people who were like family was now the second worst thing on my list of terrible experiences. It honestly took me a while to forgive them, but for the most part I have. Prolonged focusing on the gall of someone doing this to me might inevitably destroy my gallbladder or some similar eliminative organ. And I will not sacrifice parts of my body to stay in resentment. I have no doubt that there were financial, emotional health discomforts, also noticeable weight gain on both their parts and other contributing factors they were dealing with that had nothing to do with me. I'm also knowing Lars, a bit of shame and even resignation on his part, knowing Phyllis would find ways to punish him if he went against her. The experience smelled a bit karmic to me on their end, as well as on my own. Maybe I was like Phyllis, or I was afraid to stand up to a controlling mate in another lifetime. My higher self chose to experience this uncomfortable situation for growth and to balance some karma. It would be dishonest to claim that I've never done anything cruel to a friend or a mate. In my teen years, I was often jealous, possessive, even punished a few friends by making my other friends stop talking and hanging out with them when they didn't follow Jim's rules. Still, honestly, I left all that behavior behind in my late teens, and it was behavior I was not proud of in my history. I've never made romantic partners give up family or friends, so seeing this behavior from a 50-year-old woman was startling, to say the least. But this is what obsessive fear will do. The COVID years really heightened some very dark things in human behavior. The need for compromise and to prioritize a partner's needs are absolutely a necessity for any relationship to grow. Still, when a mate makes you abandon family and friends, isolates you, and puts you in incredibly uncomfortable situations, it's wise to examine whether the relationship is positive or worth staying committed to. This is clearly a major lesson in the human experience. Life and relationship change, and sometimes they even blow up to propel necessary growth. I resisted the martyr game of, did they ever care about me? Theatrics. Questionably did care about me. The fear they were sold in the media, which is something they could not overcome. A better conclusion for me is that I am a little wiser, more balanced place. And while I have fond memories of those friendships, including anyone, including friends or family with those extreme levels of fear, it's no longer a good fit for me. Growing sometimes means leaving people behind. Okay, so I wrote this column back in February of 2024. And as I pointed out at the beginning of the show, it was a long one. You know, even when I did my YouTube version of it, I've never done a video that stretched, you know, 20, 21, 22 minutes. You just try to keep them in the 6 to 11-minute range. But this was a long column. And honestly, I had to cut a lot of material out even to do this because of the significance of things I had brought up in this particular column. That being said, let me make a few comments here. Again, first thing, I think I might have pointed this out before the last time I did a column read. You know, no matter how many times I edit a column, and I have an editor too that go through my columns too. So it's funny because when I live read, I often will catch one or two spelling mistakes or even occasional grammar errors while I'm reading. So this is just one of these amazingly exhausting things about editing anything. Like, I'm telling you, like, I've published books and then looked through them later on and found spelling mistakes that none of us seemed to catch. Horrible. You know, it's really, really frustrating. I'm Sagittarius Sun sign, but I have three planets in a conjunction of Virgo. So, like, that nitpicking part of me is like, oh, I get so frustrated when I come across mistakes. But it is reality. Most of it is pretty well edited. But a couple of points I want to make here, and as I said in the beginning of the show, I'm not going to be able to take live calls today. I appreciate the calls. And some shows I'm able to take a call and have some commentary, but I'm really short on time, so I'm not going to be able to take any live calls to today's show. I've literally got like 10 more minutes, and I've got to finish the show up, so we're just not going to be able to make it. Anyway, so a couple of quick points I wanted to make here, because there's been a lot of very significant things I've seen since I've even written this column. One, if I go back to talking about the column itself, it was interesting, again, because I had a similar type of experience in my, like, early 20s with a friend who kind of got a girlfriend and eventually a wife, and I was cut out of their lives and pushed away. It was kind of thought part of that, too, because it's happened a few times in my life, is because I think sometimes with married couples, you know, being friends with, like, the single guy, some of them like it, a lot don't. You know, they're dealing with jelly stains on the counter and screaming children and stuff, and it's not that they don't love a lot of that experience, but then, you know, I always come strolling in, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to Vegas next week, and, you know, I'm going out to dinner later on, and I had sex with a hottie recently, and, you know, I think sometimes maybe they just want to strangle me. You know, it's not like I'm bragging, it's just I'm single, you know, a lot of my life. I've been in long-term relationships, but a big chunk of my life I've been single. And so I think sometimes that's part of it where, you know, married couples kind of feel like you don't really necessarily understand them and what they're dealing with. So I kind of get that part. But what I find is interesting about this piece was I went through that issue, like I said, again, in my early 20s with losing a friend. And then lo and behold, here I am in my 50s and literally going through it again in an even more exaggerated way. When I talked about the second round with my friend Matt and with my friend Lars and his wife Phyllis, which, by the way, is not their real names. Anybody with older than 40 will know that those are references to Mary Tyler Moore Show, and fittingly so. Whenever I write, I never use people's real names. I always change some elements of character as well, and then often add quite a bit of humor and sarcasm to it as well, too. That's my stab in the side. That's a Scorpio part of me coming out, but mild. So, you know, this is something I point out often to clients and people. Sometimes something is stuck in our emotional body and we haven't really fully rectified that. And then we reproduce it almost in another way. I mean, this can work in a positive sense, too, you know, where we have experiences that work out beneficially. But this, again, was a real, real negative one. And in this case, the controlling wife slash, you know, girlfriend was familiar. But this one was really triggered a lot by COVID, and it was one of the things I had said during even the beginning of COVID, that this is going to have more far-reaching effects on society and the world and people at large than expected, which of course it has. And some of it, a little of it being positive, most of it not. You know, I know a lot of people that lost friends during this, and you know, some people physically lost, you know, people who died of illness, but a bigger percentage were people that fought about what the right way was to be or what to do, you know, and with vaccination, with masking, you know, again, you could just look in the United States itself. It was blue states versus red states in behavior. You know, I've always been a little more to the left in my philosophy and my politics, although that has somewhat evened out more as I've gotten older. But I said, you know, humorously, I was born and raised in New York, very much a blue state. I was very glad to deal with COVID in a red state because the theatrics I saw with the extremes in the blue states was really just over the top, really uncomfortable. I've got family members living in, you know, California and a sister in Portland, and they were just ready to pull the hair out of their head with the ludicrous stuff that was just still going on 2 years in after COVID. So this was a trigger that did that. And I get it for Phyllis, you know, her husband had been very, very sick and that was terrifying to her. So that heightened this hypochondria that was very much part of her. And, you know, and like I said, it was Jim's the bad guy. He's not, following all the rules. And listen, I didn't fight people. I didn't go to restaurants and refuse to wear a mask or anything else for that matter. But I just did not participate in the fear theatrics the way other people did. And, you know, she'd post all this crazy stuff on Facebook. And I never commented on it, but, oh, my God, it was, like, just so theatrical. Well, this is the type of person she was, ultimately. Again, and it got cut out. And I haven't heard from them in years at this point. And, again, it took a little while to forgive that. But let me point a few things out here that I also want to mention, because I have a lot of clients right now that are dealing with some very difficult relationship themes, period. I do have some people that are in good, positive marriages and relationships, but I would say, by and large, the brunt are struggling and dealing with different forms of difficulty. I'm seeing a lot of this, and there's no, like, the women are the good ones and the men are the bad ones, and or the women are the bad ones and men are the good ones. It's a mixed bag in that sense, in terms of what I'm seeing. I'm really seeing a lot of this, and I think that it's a lot of societal reevaluation of relationship and the way you exist within them, and doing some revising about long-term relationship that I think is very important for people to recognize. As I said in the piece, you know, I think it's important, you know, when you commit to someone to prioritize that person. You know, I think that's kind of a pecking order. I often tell clients, like, you got to take care of yourself first, obviously. Otherwise, you're useless to everyone. Then, of course, the mate is the next priority. And then, you know, close family members, children, things of that nature. And I've had people argue with me about that. But I'm telling you, I've had friends who had parents where they were the divider between the parents. And, you know, if parents are together, they're going to have a strong front, so to speak. You know, when I was a kid, my mom and dad had a pretty strong, loving relationship that lasted until they both died, you know, 50-something years. You could not, if I asked something of my mother and my mom said no, and I went to my father would say, well, what did your mother say? You know, it was not going to be played that way. And it annoyed me as a child, but as an adult, I understand that was him respecting her in that way. And that's very important. So I'm not, that's a really important thing. But I'm also pointing out that when you're with someone and they convince you that your friends are bad and your family doesn't love you and you need to not be around the family and all this other stuff, that's bad. These are trigger warning signs in that way. But, again, most of us will go through some element of this at some point in our lives. Then, in a positive side, it's almost better, like, if you dealt with this earlier on when you were younger, if you dealt with this type of thing. Because you see this all the time where, you know, you see shows on television where some woman was, you know, paying this guy's bills, and she never actually saw him. She would talk to him on the phone, and he would say he needed more money, and he lived in Atlanta, and he was part of the military, and then she finds out he's not even a real person, or that he's married to someone else, and she spent, you know, a fortune. You know, I had my small version of that when I was 24, 25, so it was pretty toxic, but, like, it was a year, and then I got rid of that piece of crap, you know what I mean, and understood I was being manipulated. Get to that as I can spot it coming a mile away. So, but I think that is a real revising of how we're looking at relationships. And again, as I would point out, listen, if your mate doesn't want you to hang out with certain friends because those friends are actually toxic and difficult, that is one thing that I would say is open for discussion. But if the person is convincing you that, you know, all your friends are in love with you or want you or your family's been lying to you and that's not really the case, and you fall for it, you're kind of being manipulated. And there was a little of this that went down with Phyllis and Lars for me because, like I said, there's a lot more detail to it, but he did kind of succumb to his wife's crazy in that way. And I wish him the best. I haven't talked to him in years, and I wish him well, but I'm thinking not good, you know, that is my guess. Okay, I'm going to finish up here. This is my column. As again, I said, I don't normally do really, really long columns. This one just had so much material to it. I'd love to comment more, and I apologize that I couldn't take any calls. I would love to be able to a dialogue with a few people about this subject, but we just would not have time for it today. And let me point out real quick, I'm in the process of writing my May-June column that will be out in a few weeks. Two ways to access that: email me, get added to the mailing list so you can get it just mailed to you. Social media sites, I often will mention it. And I have a new site at buymeacoffee.com/VenturaWara. Again, you could, I think I might have posted that here on the site or in other places, but that's often where I get the columns first as well, too, over at Buy Me a Coffee site. But you can check that out. It doesn't cost anything. Same thing with following me and getting added to Mount. There's no cost for that. So those are options if you want to get the columns before I end up posting or doing radio shows on them. But this is going to be a good one because I'm talking about finding your life purpose, like what that entails. How do we, you know, access that that energy? And everybody's different, but there's ways we can access really truly understanding our life purpose, and it's really empowering when we do so. So we're talking about that in my next show. All right, I'm going to cut it off there. Thank you for joining me today, whether, again, you caught the show live or in archive. Always happy to share my insights here. I'll be back in another about month or so for the next column, and wishing everybody a happy kind of midpoint between spring and summer. Yeah, I think that's what it is. Still relatively nice here in Phoenix, but, you know, we know it's around the corner. But it was a long winter. So, all right, till next time. Cheers.